and it's 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
Blah, 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 blah.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, of course, lurking conservatives. How's everybody doing? What day is it? Wednesday?
Already?
I'm already. Well, that's good. It feels like Tuesday to me. How you doing, Mark Riley?
I'm doing great, man. How you doing?
I'm all right. So you couldn't sleep at home last night, huh?
No, man.
So you, what, are you in trouble? Are you in the doghouse,
no,
Riley?
No, no, no. It was me, the wife, and the daughter. It was we were having our the front part of our house painted, and you don't want to sit up in fumes all evening.
The toxic bedroom smell.
That's right.
Taylor,
so I got
you all right?
out.
You all right?
I'm good, buddy.
Yeah. So you got out. What hotel did you stay at?
A place in Tenafly, New Jersey.
Nothing that special? Not a bed and breakfast for the evening?
No, bed and breakfast.
A B&B in
they
Tenafly.
They don't believe in bed and breakfast in Jersey. What are you kidding me? No, only down the shore.
B&B in Tenafly. What are you doing with your summer weeks? So I'm going to spend a week at the B&B in Tenafly.
B&B in Tenafly, New Jersey. Tenafly's a nice town.
What have I got myself into with Marino Brothers Fish? Let me tell you.
Uh-oh.
I'm walking by yesterday. How about some scallops? How about some scallops? Like, this is going to be the international.
What do you got the special in the day?
I said, thank God there's no payola, dude, man, because I tell you, man, I'd be spinning records for fish.
All right, man, you know what? Let's just set your order now.
Yeah.
What would you like?
Yeah, what would you like?
The fish?
You like them jumbo door knocker shrimp?
All right, fellas, I think I'll have some wild salmon would be nice. Not the farm salmon. I want the wild stuff.
You know,
the stuff that's not a mercury sponge. All right, Troy. What do you mean?
They're going to love you.
No, but apparently farm salmon's like a mercury sponge. Like, apparently, I don't know what they're doing at the farms. I thought that was supposed to be good, but the wild stuff, that's the stuff.
The stuff is that the stuff they have in Seattle?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, man. That is salmon.
The ocean salmon.
Yeah.
Nah, but the Merino guys, they're nice guys. I just went in there yesterday, and now it's sort of like, well, what am I going to eat?
Yeah, yeah.
I had some scallops yesterday. But let's not waste time with my silly life. All right, let's talk about
Mark Felt's silly
life.
Let's
get Mark Felt, not so silly life, you know, but he's a little unclear, but he's pretty clear that he was Deep Throat. And this is the big news today. There's been a lot of speculation over the years who Deep Throat was, who Woodward and Bernstein's secret source was during Watergate. What cracked the case, one of the big helpers in cracking the case was this guy, Mark Felt. And over the years, it's been speculated that it's been, you told me before the show, George H.W. Bush.
Yes.
It's
Henry Kissinger.
Henry Kissinger.
John Dean.
And for a couple of years, Hal Holbrook was actually supposed to be Deep Throat. Not only did he play him in the movie, but the word on the street was he actually is Hal Holbrook is Deep Throat.
Yeah, but you know what? They were pretty slick about that because in the movie, Hal Holbrook smoked cigarettes and Mark Felt stopped smoking in 1943.
Oh, so that's how they
hit it. That's how they hit it. There you go.
30 years, Riley. 30 years or what? How long
hey,
has
you
it
know
been?
What? I don't care.
Yeah.
It's, you know, this is the biggest media stroke fest I've seen in a long time because it is the media that is so, you know, head up about the fact that this has finally been exposed.
Well, it's interesting that his family was fairly shameless in saying, we wanted him to say something because we're in hot.
We're running out of dough.
Yeah, we need some money, man. We need the old guy to say something.
We're up in Santa Rosa, California, up north.
But isn't it fascinating, though, that he kept his secret for this long for a couple of specific reasons? I think there was a little shame involved, but also that he wasn't necessarily, apparently according to him, he wasn't necessarily a partisan. He was trying to protect the FBI.
He was either trying to protect the FBI, if you believe that line of reasoning, or he was just another disgruntled employee because he had been passed over for the acting FBI director's job. Remember, this was around the time J. Edgar Hoover died.
Yeah.
Richard Nixon, instead of appointing Felt or someone from inside the agency, appointed someone from outside the agency perceived as a presidential stooge. Where have we heard this lately?
Yeah.
And that was this guy, L. Patrick Gray.
Okay.
And that was supposedly an element in what irritated Felt, because then in the context of the Watergate break-in, there was allegedly interference on the part of some of the players, including H.R. Haldeman.
So you're saying that the idea that the FBI was trying to remain, you know, autonomous as they could be in investigating the crimes that they were investigating revolving around Watergate, that might have been just some sham that Felt was putting forth because he was bitter. He felt, jilted, that he wanted the number one spot. He was stuck in the number two spot, and he said, I'm going to make these bastards pay.
That was is what some people, that's how some people that are angry with him are spinning it. Now, the flip side of this is it is a fact that the investigation of the Watergate break-in had started to go up the food chain. They had found out that the money to pay the burglars had been laundered through a bank in Mexico, and that bank had direct ties to Richard Nixon's re-election campaign,
right.
Believe it or not. Talking about Buy American. And then it had gotten to the point that H.R. Haldeman, who was one of Nixon's, you know, head toadies at the time,
yes.
Said, look, you guys are going to have, told the FBI, you guys are going to have to chill out on this because you're going to compromise an ongoing CIA operation in Mexico.
So that was him protecting his own butt.
There you have it.
So, but the speculation now, in retrospect, is that Felt kept this secret because, you know, he didn't see himself as some sort of patriot.
Yeah.
That, you know, whether he was bitter, the question here lies in our discussion of it is, was he just bitter in getting back at, you know, his lack of being promoted properly, or was he indeed trying to protect the integrity of the investigation and the FBI, which he said, which he thought was going, the investigation would be stifled or stopped because of the politicking around Haldeman?
Well, around Haldeman and the fact that Nixon, from his vantage point, appointed a lackey to be head of the FBI. Remember that up until this point, the FBI had only been run by one person. One person was J. Edgar Hoover.
So
throughout its entire career, its entire life, Hoover was the only director they had. So this guy, the person that would succeed Hoover, was of tremendous interest to everybody because there was no precedent.
So this might have been that you're saying, well, Hoover kind of ran his own shop.
Exactly.
Everybody was afraid of Hoover.
Because he had something on everybody.
That's the way he kept his political power.
Right.
So this might have been the first actual stooge that was put in to the FBI by a political machine.
Yeah. I mean, this was a situation where Hoover had managed to successfully navigate around a bunch of different presidents, in part because he had information, and we know this happened with Martin Luther King, too. He was black. He could blackmail some of them in terms of the information that he had.
And he did blackmail people, and
he did hold it over.
He's a very a devious and dirty, evil man.
But he kept them nonpartisan.
Right. So why don't we, for the sake of argument, stick with the story that this guy felt, Mark Felt, the guy who claims he's Deep Throat, at 91 years old, let's say that he was actually acting on behalf of the Federal Intelligence, the Federal Bureau of Intelligence. Let's say
investigation.
Let's say Central Intelligence Agency. Sorry. All right. Let's say that he was a hero on some, you know.
Oh, I think he was. I mean, look, he brought down a sitting president. Very few individuals can tie their actions directly to the unseating of the chief executive of this country.
Now, in my political life, which is really, you know, in my political awareness in life, I have not known anything other than stooges at all these agencies, like especially now. There is no separation between any of these agencies. They're all working for Bush. They're all sort of, you know, bad information mills to a certain degree.
Yeah.
If this were to happen now, there's two questions I have that I think we should talk about. If this were to happen now, if something like Watergate were to happen, would it even be dangerous to a president? And the other question I want you to help me answer is, I know I had another question. Where is it, Mark? Where's the other question?
That's all right. The answer to your first question is, depends. It depends on exactly what the set of circumstances were. One thing that you don't have to worry about now that people had to worry about then was journalists. I mean, what is there somebody now?
That's the other question,
yeah.
Is that this was a singular, anonymous source,
yes,
that literally cracked the case for these guys and helped, you know, bring justice and, you know, and reveal a crime that went all the way up to the presidency. Now that after the Newsweek debacle, that Newsweek has apologized for, you know, using an independent, anonymous source.
Yes.
So that kind of thing can't even happen anymore.
No.
So you're saying to me that the actual possibility of a crime like this even being investigated or unearthed by a journalist is probably 99.9 to 1.
Well, it's a much longer shot than it was then, because Woodward and Bernstein back then were not worried about access. Ben Bradley, the executive editor of the Washington Post, was not worried about the Post's access to the corridors of power. Journalists now are scared to death, and their bosses are all scared to death that something they write, something they say on the air, will cause the White House or the administration to retaliate by denying them access. And that they cannot tolerate.
Okay, so let's take a break now. We'll continue this conversation. Apparently, Brian from Everett, Washington, is on the phone. As some of you know who are listening, yesterday, Brian, over a series of messages, was trying to share a song that he wrote with us, and we'll play that evolution, and then we'll talk to Brian. It's sort of, you know, I didn't realize that we're not streaming live to Seattle. He had to get up in the middle of the night
to address
this
thing. Yeah, really.
Because we go from 6 to 9 on tape there. All right. 16 Bass Yard, Air America Radio.
Call us at 866.
Ha! That's awesome. Go on.
303.
Wow, yes. Yes, I love it.
2270.
Oh, yeah, drop the bomb. Drop it. There's not a dry eye in the house. Keep going.
That's 866-303-2270.
Okay, well, just so you know, it was good, but I was also being pretty generous.
This is Morning Edition on Air America Radio.
So call us right now. 800-430-9571. 800-430-9571.
Twenty-one past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
My peeps.
It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. How are you, folks? If one of your dreams is to see Mark and Mark, Mark and I,
yes.
Me and Mark,
yeah.
The Marks on Morning Sedition Live, we'll be broadcasting live this Friday from City Bakery in New York City on 18th Street between 5th and 6th Avenues from 6 to 9.
But don't touch me.
Yeah, no, you can touch him. No, you can get mad.
I'm only kidding.
We'll be giving away. He's only kidding. You can touch him.
No, you can't.
All right. We'll be giving away stuff. I think we got some keychains. Mike Doty's going to be there to play guitar and sing. Got some CDs. There'll be coffee and baked goods. Right now on the phone, I'm surprised, actually. We got some messages the other day. If you were listening yesterday, this guy Brian up there in Everett, Washington, he's a regular listener, and he calls and he leaves messages and he sends emails, and he's been listening to us for years. Well, I said something about him on the air the other day about his inconsistent mental disposition. But he's, you know, anyways, so he's working on a song, and we got a series of messages. Chris?
Now I may have some strange religious views. I believe Al Franken is the king of the Jews. And Jesus may have...
Next message.
See, now, it kept getting cut off for reasons that aren't clear to me. I don't know if it was Brian's fault or it was the machine's fault, but he did forge on.
You know, whoever with his phone system can themselves in the mouth and eat their own waste. You know, that's what I say. So leave me alone. I'm trying to get a good take and replay it back on my touch-tone pad. So can I play and get a good recording so I can hear how it sounds? I got an inconsistent mental disposition.
Next message.
So this morning, we get this message.
Okay, three things. First of all, I'm 3 hours away from you. I have to time it to call in at 4:30 in the morning, my time, because I don't get you until 3 hours later. And second of all, I drink too much. The speech patterns that come out, the profanity comes from the alcohol. And third of all, when I was trying to record the song, it wasn't your machine cutting it off. It was something with the internal working of the phone card, and I was trying to get it to where it would say, if you want to hear your message back, please press blah, blah, blah.
Oh, man.
I got an inconsistent mental disposition. How's that gonna look in a deposition?
Next message.
Well, apparently, Brian, are you on the phone?
Am I here?
Yeah.
Hey.
What?
Hey,
what? We want to
hear...
hear
a song, man?
I want to hear the whole song, Brian.
I'm not your monkey, man.
Come on, dude.
Come
on, Brian. We've been waiting for this.
Hey, listen, I'm going to do a professional recording and send you a tape. How's that sound?
No, just give us a few. Give us at least one whole verse, Brian. Come on. I know you're not my monkey, but we're all enjoying it here.
Yeah, man. We got this song rolling around.
That doesn't sound original.
I got an inconsistent mental disposition.
The cheer scene.
How's that gonna look in the deposition?
Uh-huh.
I got all messed up by a crooked family physician. And now to clear my name, I'm on a mission.
so please cut me some slack. It's just a little Manchurian blowback. Don't think that I'm insane. It's just creepy weirdos messing with my brain. Now I may have some strange religious views, 'cause I believe Al Franken is the king of the Jews. And Jesus may have come from outer space, but it ain't no reason to make a federal case. So don't give me no flack. It's just a little Manchurian blowback. I was a drunken slob, but now I'm just a fry cook looking for a job. You know, I'm trying to get a job without going through the sufferings of Job, actually. So.
Wow.
So that was beautiful, man. I appreciate you sharing that, Brian.
Yeah, but I wanted to tell you, since I've got this newfound fame, I'm going to embark on a political career, I think, just to leap off from this show.
Yeah, I think this is the beginning for you,
Brian. Yeah, I have a new political party. It's called the Antisocial Socialist Party.
That sounds good. Is it just you in it?
My slogan is, do I have to leave the house?
Oh, wow. I'll vote for you, Brian.
Hey, what happened to that Fast? You remember the Fast song you played about Al Franken?
It was going to end up like this. Al Franken, nothing to lose. Makes you laugh at the troubling news. Sometimes I wonder if he's hitting the booze. Al Franken,
king
of the Jews.
Thank you, Brian. You've made our morning. Yeah. We'll talk to you soon.
All right.
Thanks,
bye-bye.
Brian.
Okay, bye.
Okay. Wow.
Oh,
that's different.
He came through.
Who needs Mark Felt?
He came through. Yeah, Mark Felt. Well, we got some other calls, it looks like, on the line about journalism and in the context of Felt and hope and no hope and, you know, the regular stuff of Morning Sedition Fair.
There you go.
Hope, no hope. What can we do? Help! What are we going to do? It's out of control. We'll be back in a minute.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Money and Jesus, you get their attention. Like Tom DeLay, for example.
The Mike Molloy Show on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. If you want to leave us a voicemail message, 646-274-3678. 646-274-3678 is our voicemail number. 866-303-2270 is our phone number. Looks like we got some calls. We're talking about Mark Felt, 91-year-old Mark Felt. He was second in command at the FBI in the early 70s, has come out of Deep Closet.
Yes.
And saying that he is indeed Deep Throat. No, it's not George H.W. Bush. No, it's not Henry Kissinger. No, it's not about a dozen. I thought it was Hal Holbrook for years.
Yes.
I actually thought it was really Hal Holbrook. And he was investigated, apparently, but it wasn't him. It is Mark Felt, 91, whose family and a cultural momentum, pushed him out into relaying this information. Now, his family, it almost seemed like when you read some of these articles, Riley, that they were like, you know, we only got a few years here, if that, to make some dough off Grandpa.
It's called a window of opportunity.
And he says, I mean, the speculation, as we were talking about, there's two sides to it. Either he was bitter that, you know, this was the first head of the FBI after Hoover who began it and ran it since Dillinger, since the beginning, since the bootleggers. You know, some of the speculations that Mark Felt was protecting the FBI's autonomy and its ability to thoroughly investigate crimes, or that he was just bitter that he became number two and not number one.
You know, there are some very interesting parallels to the circumstances that led Felt to do this. If you look at what Nixon was trying to do with the FBI, obviously to cover his behind with Watergate, But then if you look at, for example, Dick Cheney going out to Langley and, you know, bullying the CIA on the intelligence information leading up to the war in Iraq, you see some very striking parallels in terms of administration behavior, whether it's Nixon or W. Bush's.
But obviously, why am I forgetting his name? The Clinton's CIA head.
Tenet.
Obviously, in order to keep his job, did whatever he could to accommodate George Bush, and then actually and took the fall after that. And now they've actually made the CIA just a generating place that generates information that they can use.
Oh, absolutely.
And there's a lot of bitter CIA guys because of that. I mean, we've talked to, you know, like three or four of them.
Yeah, they weren't real happy about Porter Goss's arrival over there.
Haven't heard about that guy in a while. Between Rumsfeld's military intelligence agency, I mean, what is the CIA really doing? What is Porter Goss doing over there?
Exactly. Playing solitaire on his computer?
Exactly. Let's take a couple calls. Natalie in Delaware, listening on Sirius. What's up, Natalie?
Hey, Natalie.
Hi. I was just going to say that it doesn't matter how many informants you have coming out. If you don't have a press that's willing to, like, go with the story, what difference does it make? We've had people who've come forward in the various nonsense that's gone on since we got into this bogus Iraqi war, and they get like a couple of lines maybe on page 57 of the newspaper, and you never hear from them again. You don't have the press that you had back at the time of Watergate.
Sure. Or else they get spun into the ground. They just get discredited or publicly humiliated or made to look like idiots.
I mean, you had Woodward and Bernstein who were, you know, actually willing to go out and look for the story and follow it through, and you just don't have that now. So
Thanks.
It's like, you know, what difference does it make who's going to come forward?
Thanks for your call, Natalie.
Thanks.
Well, you know, it used to be that these guys, Woodward and Bernstein, were what people in journalism school aspired to.
Oh, that's absolutely.
They were like, you know, I'm going to get into journalism school and I'm going to take down a president.
See, the thing that people miss about Woodward and Bernstein, because those who remember Watergate may remember that when they first started putting all this information out, tying the President of the United States into a cheap second-rate burglary where the participants got busted, for God's sake, there were people in the administration that tried to do the same kind of spinning that the current Bush administration does. And that included personal attacks on Woodward and Bernstein. The difference was Woodward and Bernstein and Ben Bradley, to his credit, the then editor of the Washington Post, stood their ground on the story. They knew they had the information. They knew the information was good.
And the Washington Post confirmed that this was Mark Felt. But that's all they could do. You were talking about that yesterday.
They got caught flat-footed. They got caught completely. Here's the paper that broke the story, that unseated the president. And what happened? A monthly magazine, through a number of convoluted sources. And by the way, this, folks, is going to be something that you'll see some in the media jump on. The idea that apparently a lawyer that was close to the Felt family, this guy O'Connor, is the guy that wrote the piece for Vanity Fair. And apparently, initially, he asked that the Felts get paid, and Vanity Fair flatly turned them down, and then they turned around and gave him the story anyway, I guess figuring they'd make the money on the back end. But there is some question about whether the Felts needed money for college tuition or something.
Well, it seems I read that in a couple of the pieces that is actually one of the incentives. But neither here nor there, because this is a guy. It's a tremendous story. It was a deep secret who Deep Throat was for 30 years. Mm-hmm. But we're going to have the cat, Timothy Noah, who writes for Slate. He called this a few years back.
Several years back.
Saw it coming.
He saw it coming.
Woodward said it wasn't, that he was wrong, and we're going to talk to him about that a little later. Well, you remember, like, I was, 11 or 12? I mean, I was just getting bar mitzvahed when Watergate was going down. I remember, you remember the day after you saw All the President's Men, the movie, and then you saw what the real Woodward and Bernstein looked like, and you're like,
Wow. That didn't look anything like Redford and Hoffman. I was just starting out in radio.
Oh, yeah?
I started in 73.
Oh, wow.
So I saw all of this unfold. I mean, you know, Woodward and Bernstein were icons in journalism at that time.
Huge.
Point. Yeah.
Let's take a call. We've got Robert in Texas. What's going on, Robert?
Hey, Robert.
This Deep Throat revelation to me is still fishy. And they say this old man is the guy, but to me it's like, why now? And I don't like making fun of old folks, but you know this video of him standing out there on his walker?
Yeah.
I'm looking at this old man, and it's like I'm reading his lips, and it looked to me like he's saying, as he looked out on all the cameras, he's like going, Oh, look at all these wonderful Christmas carolers. Merry Christmas to all you youngsters.
But it's good that you don't like making fun of them. That's good.
Yeah, that is good. You don't like making fun of the guy.
Thanks for your call. Yeah. I'm not sure why you did that. But I understand. Yeah. Well, no, the mental stability issue is an issue. Obviously, he's old.
An issue until the Post confirmed that it was him.
Right, because he seemed to have a tone like, you know, I don't buy it.
Yeah. And maybe you'd have a case if the principals involved didn't say, hey, this was the guy we talked to.
Well, that's going to be interesting to see the moron spin machine and see what they do with this and how they're going to.
I think Buchanan wants to take this poor 91-year-old guy out and shoot him. I don't know.
Well, what did Buchanan basically implied that he should have gone through
He should have gone to a prosecutor.
Right.
Who would have fixed it anyway, probably.
Right. Well, what would a prosecutor would have done at that time aside from get sucked into the entire controversy for his own interest?
Of course. There was no Watergate special prosecutor for him to go to at the time. That came later.
Yeah. Well, you know, to me, it's one of these puzzling things is that how is this going to affect? Does this have any effect on journalists today? Is there anyone out there in mainstream journalism, obviously, that has the courage to break a story like this? You see in the blogosphere a lot of times people are doing, you know, tremendous investigative work.
Yeah, they are.
Sorting through stuff, finding things out. But that doesn't have the credibility until it surfaces in the mainstream one way or the other, until a small sort of sperm cell of blog information is able to sort of plunge
into
the
embryo of the media.
Right, the ovum of mainstream media to where they have to reckon with it.
Yeah.
You know, does it really come through? And maybe that's just the route it's going to have to go now. Who the hell knows?
Well, you make a good point, Mark, because there is a question of whether or not. See, the problem with the blogosphere is that the people that are doing the good work are roughly equal to the people that are just BSing half the time with the stuff they
got to sort through some stuff.
Exactly. You have to really kind of sift through what you got to, you know, like you deal looking for gold nuggets or something.
Mm.
There are some really good people doing the work out there, but you got to know who they are and you got to know where they get their information and you got to filter that through your own knowledge in order to understand what they're saying.
Man, reality's gotten difficult. You know,
it's not that bad.
It's not that bad, but it's very hard to, you know, when you see that the fix is in terms of how news is created, how news is spun, you know, what gets out there, what doesn't get out there, you know, what the truth really is. And then when you have, you know, alternative information coming in through the blog and through, you know, counter bloggers who are trying to discredit any real information that comes out, you know, in order to really find your way, you know, outside of your own little world into what might be considered truth, it's definitely a difficult path, man.
Well, I mean, there are times when you can go out into that world of truth and, like our president, decide to withdraw very quickly because you don't like what you see. I'm going to be very interested to hear what Bush has to say about all this, considering, in fact, his old man was once targeted at Deep Throat.
Well, I'm curious to see what the entire spin machine has to say about this, whether they characterize him as a traitor, whether they, you know, they're obviously not going to characterize him as a hero, because despite what any of these idiots say, you know, Nixon was a powerful, heroic guy to some of these Republicans.
Well, remember, Buchanan was his speechwriter, and Buchanan is called felt a traitor.
Mm-hmm.
Like, since this all came out. So, you know, some people hold grudges for an incredibly long period of time.
But that's the amazing thing is that, you know, how, and I think about half of this country, a little less, will stand by a lie if it means, you know, keeping the integrity that they see intact.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? Is that, how is he a traitor if what he was saying was true? I mean, what is Pat Buchanan protecting? What are they protecting? They're protecting lies, dirty business, anti-American, anti-democratic actions, criminal activity. That's what they're saying. When they call that guy a traitor, they sign on to all of that. They admit that they're sympathetic to that, and they admit that you know, that should have been kept a secret.
Wouldn't be the first time. I mean,
look,
Buchanan and these guys stood up for the people that were involved in Iran-Contra. They have stood up for virtually any Republican who has been involved in any scandal short of sex. You know, sex is a whole different thing.
Yeah.
But if they're involved in routine white-collar crime type stuff, no big deal.
But white-collar crime that is betraying the trust of the American people is what this party has always stood for and what they still stand for. And they've just got a lot of zombies out there that want to help them do that now in the guise of integrity and moral superiority. It's such crap.
Of course.
Okay. Well, let's thank God we have this Wi-Fi headline translator. Let me get that warmed up, and we'll pass some headlines through that when we come back.
Hi, this is Charles Barkley. When I want to get caught up on the world events and I can't get in touch with Shaq, MJ, Larry, or Manute Bowl, I turn to Mark Maron and Mark Riley. It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Y'all ready for this?
Support our troops in Iraq and Afghanistan. Operation Truth. We were there.
Paid for by Operation Truth, Incorporated.
That's right, 50 past the hour. Ow, ow. Did I just do that? 50 past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. Morning Sedition, the facts, the fury, the funny. Morning Sedition, don't be stupid. It's Mark and Mark. I'm just like practicing slogans or something. As long as you keep playing that music, I'll keep rambling. Do you realize that? Just because the music's on, it adds a whole other element. And See, even if I just stop talking for a second, it's Billy Gibbons playing guitar. How cool is that? What am I, stupid? All right, here we go. Sometimes when you read the headlines, it can be tough to figure out just exactly what the mainstream media is saying. So luckily, of course, we have the iNews 5000 Wi-Fi headline translator. Why don't we feed it some headlines and see what the truth really is? From the Associated
Press. My next ringtone.
Why is that so funny? It's unbelievable. If you let it go and you don't interrupt it and just let the last few notes hang there.
They resonate. Yeah.
From the Associated Press, ex-FBI official unmasked as deep throat. Translation. Oh, sorry. Let me put it in the machine first. Oh, boy. Here we go. Here we go. I almost ruined the whole joke. You know, there's a minute there where people would have thought that that credibility was shot. That, hey, wait a minute. He doesn't really have a machine. Ex-FBI official unmasked his deep throat. Translation, Felt says it back. Felt says that's back when the FBI knew things. Uh-huh. Okay. From Fox News, Bush says Guantanamo Bay criticism, quote-unquote, absurd. Bush says Guantanamo Bay criticism absurd. Translation, brutal reality repelled by Bush's absurdinator. Oh, gosh. Is this the right thing? All right, here we go.
What's going on?
Nothing.
Is everything okay over there?
I don't know, man. I'm having a little skid over here. I'm all right. I just was looking on my toy here. All right, here we go. From the Associated Press, Man halfway in quest to visit 1,000 bars. Yeah, that's it. Man halfway in quest to visit 1,000 bars. Translation, man hugs 1,000 strangers, tells each, I love you, man. Let's see it again. Agent says George went still looking for work. That was the one. I wonder if people can hear that on all of our stations. Can you hear the delicate trailing off of Brendan P.W. McDonald's vocal genius?
Nuanced resonance.
Yes, there you go. Wow, it's poetry day.
Hey.
Everyone's writing haikus. Here we go. So Arthur Andersen, the accounting firm that was, played a big part in, breaking the bank of many people who were invested in Enron, of many people who were employed by Enron, of putting a lot of people's pension, in the garbage, has been let off. Is that what I'm to understand, Riley?
The Supreme Court has reversed Arthur Andersen's conviction for obstruction of justice in that Enron case, and their obstruction was, I guess we have to now say allegedly, shredding hundreds of documents that apparently might well have pointed to Enron's eventual guilt,
But does this mean that they're guilty, they're not guilty? What happens? How
it means that they might be retried on those very same charges.
Okay. Now, see, I don't quite understand how this works. Why the hell are they letting why do these guys all get off? I mean, apparently this was Justice William Rehnquist made this decision. Now, I'm just thinking to myself, well, okay, he's going to die soon, so he just let him off. What has he got to lose? But that's not really the way this works. They're sympathetic to corporations. How does this work? Why aren't these guys strung up more often, Riley?
All right, what happened in this case is that the court focused on the charge to the jury that was given by Judge Melinda Harmon. This was a federal district court in Houston, and that charge, of course, defined the standards and hurdles that the jury had to clear to reach a guilty verdict. And according to Judge Rehnquist, Judge Harmon, quote, failed to convey the requisite consciousness of wrongdoing. Now, in plain speaking English, apparently Rehnquist doesn't think that shredding documents in and of itself is anything criminal.
But why is that? I mean, apparently they judge corporations differently. Let me quote Kurt Eichenwald here from his column. White-collar cases are not akin to and are, in fact, often the opposite of trials involving murder or bank robbery, where everyone usually acknowledges that a crime took place and merely debate the culpability of a particular defendant. Instead, in white-collar cases, defense lawyers often admit their client's involvement in particular acts while arguing that no crime ever occurred. That is because a potential fraud or obstruction of justice is only illegal if the defendant acted with the knowledge and intent to commit a crime.
See, what they may be saying there is, look, did Enron say to Arthur Anderson, destroy these documents? Or did Arthur Anderson more or less implement an internal policy that says when there's some controversy, shred the documents? So that question means, you know, Arthur Anderson may not have believed it was committing a crime by telling its employees to shred documents as per an existing company policy.
Right, to shred documents.
Yes.
So it might just be business as usual, so
yeah,
that's
exactly
what they're letting them off on. And the interesting thing is here, the Bush administration said it was going to prosecute white-collar criminals. The prosecution of white-collar criminals was going to be a high priority following all these horrendous corporate scandals that have happened with WorldCom, Enron, Adelphia. And now, like, the most interesting thing to me is that all of a sudden, Bush, in a speech he made yesterday, talking about President Vladimir Putin's, the prosecution of this
guy, that multi-billionaire
Mikhail Gordonkovsky, an oil tycoon who had all the money in Russia, and he's up on tax evasion fraud or tax evasion charges. And Bush says, "Quote: Here, you're innocent until proven guilty." And it appeared to us, at least people in my administration, that it looked like he had been judged guilty prior to having a fair trial. We're watching the ongoing case. Unquote. So this guy, our president, is looking out for an oil tycoon in Russia who's up on charges because. And he's saying that he's going to do something about white-collar crime here. He's trying to protect a billionaire in Russia who's in the oil business, same business his family's in, and all of a sudden he's lending a sympathetic ear to this guy?
Maybe they're worried about gas prices.
Gas prices? Maybe he's an old business associate. Maybe
that
they've got
could
dirty
be
dealings.
It too, yeah.
Don't forget the big old black market. All right, so when we come back, more of me and Mark. How would that grab you in today's news? And
we're going to talk to a guy who knew it was felt beforehand.
Beautiful.
Next on Air America Radio.
Six past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley. It's morning sedition on Air America Radio. Good morning.
Yeah.
Good morning, Mark. How
Hi.
Are you?
Good I'm doing great, man.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, lurking conservatives, of course. Good morning, Kalo. How are you, my friend?
I'm good, buddy. How are you?
You're trying to decide where you're going to stay in Rome. That's a luxury problem, as we say in the business.
Uh-oh.
A luxury problem. Where am I going to stay in Rome? Oh, let me think. It's a walking city. You can get anywhere.
Yeah.
Don't worry about it.
I'm going for the cheapest possible hotel.
Yeah, well, you know, in Europe, they think about hotels differently. I don't know where Riley stayed in Tenafly last night because they were painting his house. But in Europe, most hotels are just the size of a closet because you don't hang out in the room. Who the hell's going to hang out in the room? You're in Europe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know
but
what
in
I mean?
Tenafly, you hang out in the room.
Sure. What else are you going to do in Tenafly? It's not like you go, let's go to the Vatican in Tenafly.
Yeah. Let's well, no, there's a Catholic school nearby.
Let's go to that famous national park here in Tenafly, New Jersey.
Hey, man, there might be. Well, actually, there's a place called Froggy Park.
that's a big tourist attraction. I'm sure that hotel was packed where you were at last night.
Well, it was, actually. There were several groups.
Sorry, no rooms. Everyone's here for the big Froggy Park.
No, you know what? Everybody was in. All the hotels in North Jersey got booked because of that soccer match yesterday.
Oh, the,
between England
with,
and Colombia.
Beckham, right?
Yes,
was that why he was
David
here?
Beckham was here for
He's
that
trying
match.
To get everyone to get to know him here. They're trying to make Americans like soccer. Good luck with that.
Hey.
I barely like baseball.
I love soccer.
Football, what? Soccer? Yeah. I know you love soccer, but it's not, you know, I mean.
I know. It's not your. You don't like any sports, man. You're a nihilist when it comes to
I'm a nihilist when it comes to a lot of things. Believe me, I'm just pretending. Let me tell you something. If I had my druthers, my friend, I would sit at home.
Nihilist and druthers in the same paragraph.
I was just sitting home thinking, oh, look at me. I'm the king of my apartment. That's enough. Maybe I'll read something. I'll write some words down. No nap time.
Yeah.
Hey, if your big dream or one of them is to come see Mark and I do this show live, which I'll tell you, it's going to be, you know, Garrison Keillor, you know, you got. We're going to go up against you. That's right.
That's right.
The hell with Lake Wobegon and whatever the hell he's got going there in Minnesota. We're gonna do our own live show at 6 in the morning here in New York City at City Bakery. That's 18th Street between 5th and 6th Avenues from 6 to 9, as I said. We'll be giving away free stuff. Mike Doty, hopefully he'll hang out for most of the show. That's my dream, that Mike Doty will come down and kind of play us in and out of breaks, do a few songs.
I like Mike's work. I really do. I listen to his music.
He's great. He's one of the best singer-songwriters around. We're going to have the Milfington. The Cardinal's going to be there.
The Cardinal?
Lawton Smalls.
I heard a rumor about the Cardinal, too.
What?
That he may come in full regalia. I don't know whether that's true.
Look, folks, it's a radio show. You're going to put that on the... I mean, you know, God, I know that someone's going to come down there going, I thought you guys were real.
Hey, you know what? If he wore that Cardinal garb on the train, we'd get news coverage.
Well, maybe he will then. Maybe we'll get him a Cardinal's outfit. Also, I hear the liberal aggressor might be there as well.
Uh-oh.
He's trying to pull together a meeting.
What's the name of his group?
Teabag.
Teabag, yeah, that's it.
Well, it's been a few things. It's been Poodle, Teabag. Balls was good, yeah. I will be at Gotham Comedy Club this Friday and Saturday. But that's only if you want to come. Yeah, I'm not going to push it. It's not what I'm all about. But I'll be there trying to make some new funny. I'm trying to build some new stuff. You can go to www.gothamcomedyclub.com for information. You can also podcast Morning Sedition if you'd like. You can do at morningsedition.com. All right, for those of you who are just tuning in, let's go over the news here. Here's a few highlights of what we've already talked about. Well, obviously, there's a few things in the news. Mark Felt, 91-year-old, ex-number two guy at the FBI,
is
deep throat. While Felt has secured... Here we go with the cliff notes. Let me just tighten it up for you people. As I said, a former FBI official says he was Watergate's deep throat. While Felt has secured his infamy as deep throat, fake White House reporter Jeff Gannon will still be known as Baldo the teabagging ex-Marine. Okay. Felt was called Deep Throat because he refused to let Nixon screw him. All right. Speaking of Deep Throat, a new book claims to reveal the secrets of the Clinton White House. In their first conversation after the Lewinsky book, the Lewinsky story broke, Clinton shouted it at Al Gore. Shouted at Al Gore, this is a coup d'etat! Gore just stared back blankly. It was the most animated moment of his vice presidency. Okay. Apparently, there was some marital tension in the Clinton family. Imagine that.
No.
Huh?
No.
New monitoring system lets parents spy on their kids' lunches. This should put an end to the clandestine shame eating and put it back where it belongs, at home. Clandestine shame eating. Did I screw that one up somehow? Let me try it again. This should put an end to clandestine shame eating and put it back where it belongs, at home. One child said, this cookie fills up a mommy-shaped hole. Mmm, I love you, sugar mommy, even more than absent drunk real mommy.
Oh, wow.
Holy mackerel. Those are some of your morning cliff notes. For today. You all right, Chris? Wow. Chris, are you going to be all right?
I don't know. That's a long baby cry. My God.
I feel so bad. I feel so bad for doing that to you, especially being the man-child that I am. But it feels good, though. It's always funny. I got a good laugh. Do you want to do some news? I guess people are probably wondering, what's going on there? We told you, Mark Felt, ex-number two guy in the 70s at the FBI, has come out, or was literally pushed out the door by his family stuttering yesterday, that he is actually Deep Throat. And this is I think it's an important revelation. I think it's a very exciting thing. 30 years undercover. I don't know how much shame or how much he was trying to hide this or whether it was eating at him or not. I'm not sure he knows, but it has been confirmed by the Washington Post, by Woodward and Bernstein, by others, that he is and was indeed the Deep Throat from the Watergate scandal.
Well, it was interesting to see what happened yesterday, Mark. After the word about the Vanity Fair piece got out there in the media, and of course they went to Woodward, who continued to say, I'm not saying who Deep Throat is because I promised I wouldn't say it while he was still alive. And then by the end of yesterday, they had changed their minds after they realized essentially that the Post had been completely scooped here.
Yeah. Well, you know what's fascinating to me, and we were talking about this a little bit earlier, is that, like, I'm fairly new to politics. You know, if I was better at politics, I'd be Jon Stewart. But anyways, I'm not just talking about that in subject matter either, my friends. And I'm not bitter. Do you understand? I'm not bitter. But the interesting thing to me is that he says there are claims that Felt has made that he was protecting the autonomy of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, that this was a time, as you were saying earlier, right after J. Edgar Hoover died, where no one had run the place before.
Exactly.
And there was a stooge that was put as number one. So it could either be Felt's bitterness at not being chosen as number one, or actually saying that, you know, Nixon and his henchmen, you know, i.e.,
Haldeman, Ehrlichman, Chuck Colson, that whole crew
were trying to bully the FBI into stifling the investigation with a series of different excuses. And this guy Felt either was bitter that he wasn't number one, or he was saying, look, they're going to bury this thing, and it's my duty to give you this information. Woodward and Bernstein, to take this guy down because it's a crime against the people of this country. It's a crime against democracy.
Interestingly enough, you know, when he was asked, and we're going to get into this a little bit later with our guest Tim Noah from Slate, because Tim Noah talked to Felt at a point about this. But, you know, Tim Noah says that Felt at one point not only denied being Deep Throat, but said that he thought what Deep Throat did was wrong. Which is a kind of interesting way, I guess, to keep people off the track at that point. He told Tim Noah what Deep Throat did was wrong.
Who told him?
Felt.
Oh, yeah.
That
doesn't make any sense.
Of course it does. You're trying to keep him off your, you know, trying to maintain anonymity.
Oh, the cover. Right.
Yes.
Well, and what does this imply to? It's like, you know, people protect sources, and this guy certainly has been one of the most well-protected sources, to the point where, you know, as he got older, there was a real question as to whether or not, hey, are you sure he wants to give out this information?
Woodward questioned whether or not he was mentally competent
right.
to say this.
And Bernstein, there was this issue that Bernstein might have told his then wife, Nora Ephron. Of course he did. Who doesn't tell? My wife, I was talking on the phone with my wife last night, and she was talking about this friend of hers that's going out with this guy, and she stopped going out with this guy, and this other friend or this other person you know started going out with the guy. And I'm like, well, who's the guy? She's like, I don't know if I can tell you that. I'm like, what do you mean,
what?
I'm your husband. You tell me everything. It's like, but it's gossip. Dude, where are your priorities? I'm the guy you do tell. What do you mean? Of course he told Nora Ephron, but apparently the kid, Bernstein's kid, was at summer camp and dropped the name. But I don't know what, you know, hey, it's Mark Felt is going to meet into a bunch of 11-year-olds.
Yeah.
Really? It's Mark Felt?
Mark Felt
was Deep Throat?
Yeah, well, you know, Nora Ephron.
That explains everything, some kid said. Come on, give me my bow and arrow. Yeah. Go ahead.
Well, Nora Ephron apparently had to kind of like cover up how her son, who I think was, 11 years old at the time, how her son came up with the guy's name in the first place. And she says now that she suspected that Felt was the one. And in a couple of weeks, I think we'll be able to ask her ourselves, won't we?
Yeah, she's going to be on the show, apparently,
because
she did a movie that we're going to shamelessly promote because she's Nora Ephron and Will Ferrell's in it. It might be funny.
Yeah.
I'm kind of getting tired of Will Ferrell. And after, I'll tell you, he's funny, but it's just the same thing over and over again. And after Cinderella Man, Paul, what's his name? Giamatti?
Giamatti.
Yeah.
I'm a little tired of Paul Giamatti.
Or your father says GM Senta.
GM Senta. Save the picture. There we go. So coming up now, a guy who actually called this. He said that it was Mark Felt back in May of 2002. He talked to Woodward. He's a writer for Slate. Timothy Noah will help us with this conversation coming up next. 17 past the hour, Air America Radio.
MorningSedition.com. Our guests, our comedy, your blog. MorningSedition.com. Air America Radio.
Subscription and keep the video, booklet, and magazine free.
So call 800-423-3100. That's 800-423-3100.
I wish I was 18 again. 21 past the hour. Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hi.
That, of course, is Highway to Hell by AC/DC. A very important song to me and to many others, I think, out there as well.
Shook me all night long.
Well, man, I'm going to shoot myself.
It happened.
That wasn't even Bon Scott. That was Back in Black, which was the last good AC/DC album. But that's not important now. What's important is we know who Deep Throat is. It's Mark Felt. He was second in command at the FBI back in the 70s. I can't believe I just did that. Guitar is guitar. You know, I'm going to be mad at myself for that for the rest of the day. Dan-an-an, dan-an-an. That's how we do. All right. Let's get back to it. Our next our guest is one of the select few to point the finger at Mark Felt, former deputy associate director of the FBI some years ago. And, you know, he's got to be feeling a little good about that this morning. Timothy Noel writes the chatterbox for Slate.com, and he joins us on the phone from D.C. So you nailed it, man. You knew.
Well, I didn't know. I had a strong suspicion that it was Mark Felt. I do have to say, in all honesty, that in the last couple of years, my attentions were drifting towards Fred Fielding, who was another possibility. But Felt is the person I pushed the most and the longest.
So what happened over the process of your wavering and initially, why did you know it was Mark Felt?
Well, the main reason was that there was a very compelling article by James Mann in 1992 in The Atlantic that didn't get a lot of attention. I guess The Atlantic's readers are too classy to care about who Deep Throat was. they're more interested in reading about desertification or nuclear non-proliferation. But it was quite a story. And Mann had sat next to Woodward at the Post at the time. He had been a reporter at the Post at the time. And he said that Woodward kept talking about, my guy at the FBI. And this was before Watergate. And my guy at the FBI gave Woodward a story about the George Wallace shooting and a few other stories. And he guessed that my guy at the FBI was also helping Woodward out with Watergate.
Now, we've been talking this morning, Tim, is there, about what the reason that you think he might have done it is. There's two ways we can go with this. Is that he's trying to protect the FBI, or he was bitter, or both? What do you think?
Well, yeah, I think we're with Felt. We're talking about a bad man who did a good thing. He was a Hoover loyalist. He was loyal to J. Edgar Hoover, who was a very terrible man who ran the FBI for years and years. And Felt himself participated in some illegal searches, or he authorized, rather, some illegal searches without warrants, and he was prosecuted for that, subsequently pardoned by Ronald Reagan. And he was very loyal to the J. Edgar Hoover FBI. Hoover died a month before the Watergate break-in, and the FBI was terrified that the Nixon White House was going to bring them under control. They really had been raging out of control for decades. And, of course, the Nixon White House not only would bring the FBI under control, it would manipulate the FBI and make them part of the Watergate cover-up, because they put in a Nixon loyalist who was shoveling FBI documents over to the White House on a daily basis.
Now, Tim, in 1999, Bob Woodward apparently paid a visit to the home of Mark Felt's daughter, Joan, out in Santa Rosa. What was the substance of that visit?
Well, we don't know exactly what the substance of the visit was, but Joan, I know Joan had suspected that her father might be deep throat for a while. I spoke with her that same year, and she indicated to me that she had her suspicions, and she had a very funny, in fact, on her voicemail, she had a very funny message saying, you know, if you want to leave a message for Mark Felt, Joan Felt, or Deep Throat, do so after the beep.
Wow. So do you think part of the incentive here, I mean, it strikes me, I guess, like, which question is more important? Now, it seems to me that this is an independent, anonymous sources are very important to taking down, to breaking big news. And now the journalists today are very afraid to do anything. Now, do you think this is going to continue? Should this be an inspiration to people?
Well, I think that, look, Woodward and Bernstein were great reporters. Woodward is still a great reporter. Bernstein is when he writes as well, but less frequently. And you got to remember that Deep Throat was a guy they used to confirm information they had from elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
They used multiple sources in Watergate. They used multiple anonymous sources in Watergate. What's important about Deep Throat is that he was a very highly placed anonymous source.
So yeah, but
that's
wasn't important.
The guy. It wasn't just a matter of Mark Felt.
It was good reporting.
Dictating to Bob Woodward.
It was good reporting.
It was good reporting.
Well, thank you very much, Tim Noah, for joining
us.
It was great talking to you.
Thanks so much.
Take care. So that's we got a little something there.
Yeah,
that was interesting. So now we got Sammy the Stem Cell is going to be talking to us next here on Air America Radio.
You're listening to Morning's Edition on Air America Radio.
Everything is fair for the Republicans because they believe in nothing except power.
The Majority Report on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. If one of your secret desires is to see Mark and I do this show live, we will be broadcasting from City Bakery in New York City here on 18th Street between 5th and 6th Avenues from 6 to 9 a.m. So come on down. We got stuff. Mike Doty's going to be there. He's going to be singing songs. We'll be giving away CDs. There's going to be baked goods. There might be mugs. Maybe a T-shirt or something.
I want a mug.
I do too. There's a rumor that we're going to get mugs.
Woo-hoo!
Yeah, I know. Everything's changing here at Air America.
I'm excited.
Everybody's going to get mugs. So look, to help us sort out some of the controversy surrounding stem cell research in the upcoming vote in Congress, we have a special guest. It's the second time on the show, Sammy the Stem Cell. Good morning, Sammy. How are you?
Hi, I'm Sammy the Stem Cell.
Sammy, last week I think we kind of got started off on the wrong foot. And look, I just wanted to apologize.
Back off, loser! I'm an innocent life! I'm a unique, living, integrated human person! I'm a tough mofo, so get used to it, you dumb heap!
Whoa! Like I said last time, you're not human, you're just a wad of cells. Did you just call me a dumb heap?
You just called me a blastocyst?
A what?
Yeah, you heard me, Christ killer!
Hey!
Blastocyst! I'm a fully functioning person! You'll find that out later when you're extricating my foot from your ass!
Whoa, what did you just say?
Yeah, from your ass!
What did you just say?
You heard me! You're having trouble hearing behind me!
Whoa!
Let me turn it up for you!
Whoa, man, not this again.
That's right, I'm giving you the finger, flipping you the bird.
Okay, Sammy, when and where does life begin?
Right now, in my pants, loser. What do you think of that?
It's disgusting. You're gross, man.
And you're welcome.
Do you think your friend Bill Frist approves of, like,
hey, 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 hey.
What?
Whoa!
What?
Slow down!
What?
Don't you worry about Frist. Frist, Cheney, Delaney, they're all working for me anyway. I got them right in the palm of my hand, fella.
You don't have any hands.
No! You want to take this outside?
Is that a threat, Sammy?
No, all I'm saying is, turn off the music! Turn off the damn music!
Wow.
All I'm saying is, people need to be very careful about what they say. Just as they need to be careful about what they do. Okay, music.
So what, you're quoting Donald Rumsfeld? That's Rumsfeld, right?
Yeah, now I'm going to quote Tom Delay. I'm going to kill me a roach.
Ah, my eyes! Oh, my God, this is horrible. You know what, you should be killed.
Yeah, life is sacred. You can't kill me. You can't kill me. I can't even kill me.
You're
scare me, man. Why don't you just leave?
Why don't you just off?
Hey, you know what? You oh.
Right back at you, hole in the house you rolled in on. Help the world's population explode into smog, sucker. Hey, why don't you adopt 400,000 embryos and you're going to hell, Infidel.
Get out. My eyes.
Ow. Get your hands off me.
Get out. This is weird. Get out.
All right. Then get your hands off me.
All right. Just get out. I don't want to have to throw you out. I'm getting
goop. Don't touch my coat.
There's goop all over my hands. You're covered in goop. All right. That was surreal and weird.
Yeah,
you like that, Riley?
So long, Sam.
Yeah. Give me your pants.
Thanks for sharing.
Oh, my God. What else happens in this world? You're interviewing a stem cell now?
Well,
what?
Well, we were.
Arlen Specter is fighting for stem cells. Also, Arlen Specter, the Republican, is now fighting for, the rights of detainees.
I don't know. He must be having some kind of conversion.
That's right. He's got cancer, and now, he's obviously trying to do something right for some people.
Well,
right?
Yeah, he is. And, Arlen Specter has traditionally been known as a moderate. He has gotten some heat from the conservative wing of the Republican Party, which seems to be half the Senate at the rate we're going. But he is seemingly, not to make light of it, but I think that his illness has kind of changed his philosophy a little bit. Mm-hmm. Certainly, when you look at what he said about stem cells, when you look at how he got in Sam Brownback's grill, usually senators don't do that publicly, but he did it. Now we're seeing him, start to talk about pushing the entire Congress to take on the issue of the treatment of enemy combatants and other people who are captured and held by the American government, mm-hmm. because it has become an issue around the world, Mark. That's the thing that a lot of Americans, because they don't, the administration chooses not to, focus on it. This is what we are reaping around the world. People are looking at us and saying, well, you can't tell us how to do democracy or how to live our lives. Look at what you do.
Yeah, and then Bush gets on TV yesterday and says that, it's absurd that, Amnesty International's criticism of the United States is absurd because the information came from people that don't like America, that hate America, the prisoners. But it didn't come from them. It came from, investigations. It came from...
Red Cross.
Yeah, people who were assessing the situation in a relatively objective way. I mean, torture is torture, isn't it?
Torture is torture, number one. Number two, not everyone who has been detained by the United States hated the United States when they began their detention. There have been several people who have been found to have been totally innocent. There have been people who have been freed because they were detained initially because of mistaken identity. There are all of these different cases, and Bush is right. You do 3 or 4 months at Guantanamo, you might come out hating somebody.
If you didn't go in hating them,
exactly.
It'll certainly make you hate them.
Yeah, I mean, remember that, the soldiers that were dealing with these detainees had no way of really parsing out. We've had several people talk to us about this. They have no way of knowing who's the innocent and who's the guilty. As far as they're concerned, they're detained. They must be guilty of something, mm-hmm. so they end up treating them all the same way. Mm-hmm. And then the innocent ones, the ones who end up, finally having someone believe their story, I was just on a plane going, so those folks come out, and many of them are the ones that have been talking about torture. These are not al-Qaeda. These are not sympathizers. At least they weren't when they got detained initially.
Well, it amazes me that the disrespect that these people have, this administration, the neocon death cult, for any international law, certainly for people that are detained for any reason on terms of a rights level, and also for the military. I mean, this is a president that's never been to a military funeral, and now we have a former guest on our show.
Yes.
He was, Colonel David H. Hackworth was one of the most decorated heroes of all time. This is a guy, 2 Distinguished Service Medals, 10 Silver Stars, 8 Bronze Stars, 8 Purple Hearts. He died on May 4th, and he's going to be buried at Arlington Cemetery. And apparently, the big brass, like Rumsfeld, these guys, Cheney, are not going to show up for his funeral because he was an outspoken critic of the way the Pentagon treated military personnel, for years.
Yeah, and, this is a guy who, by the way, put his reputation where his mouth was. This is a guy who, throughout his military career, and apparently lied about his age to go into service in the first place. I think he was like 15 or something. But throughout his career, he always looked out for what they call the grunts, the people under him, under his command. He always wanted to make sure they were properly compensated, they were properly equipped, that they had a very clear battle plan. He took a lot of heat, Mark, during Vietnam when he came back from a tour of duty and said the Vietnam War is unwinnable and that it would be over in 4 years. And you know what? It was over in 4 years.
Yeah.
He called it.
But it's just amazing the lack of respect these people are going to pay him because he was a critic of the Pentagon, of the policy, of what was going on. Anybody who speaks out in the Army from within the ranks is going to be treated, you know, miserably. It's so disrespectful that somebody like Donald Rumsfeld wouldn't show up at this guy's funeral. It's unbelievable to me that the president. Is the president going to be there?
Doesn't sound like it. Mark, this is two distinguished service medals, 10 silver stars, 8 bronze stars, 8 purple hearts. That is a distinguished military career by anyone's definition.
And then more recently, this guy, you know, John Riggs, who is a general, a 3-star general, he's being, you know, they're going to take his star away because of what they're saying, you know, that he, you know, hired contractors to do military jobs that he shouldn't have. But the truth of the matter is, this was another guy that spoke out against how the Iraq conflict was being handled.
Yeah.
And now he is being, you know, he resigned, and they're going to take a star away from him. They're saying for reasons, you know, other than the fact that he said, look, you haven't got enough men here. This army's not big enough. This isn't going to work.
This is how, unfortunately, too many times, government gets even with whistleblowers. People who criticize what they're doing. And you know, in both Colonel Hackworth's case and in this particular case with John Riggs, you're talking about people whose criticism seems to have some validity on its face. These are not the only people who are saying that the military is under-equipped. These aren't the only people who said that they had no clear strategy when they went into Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
But yet these are the people that are ending up paying. These are the people that the military ends up scapegoating.
Yeah.
For their own mistakes, for the Pentagon's short-sighted.
The suits, the
yes.
Hawks, the guys that didn't even serve.
The chicken hawks.
Yeah, absolutely. So when we come back, we're going to have the war on brains. We're going to talk, you know, Russ Feingold, Senator Russ Feingold from Wisconsin,
yes.
Wants to come on and talk to us again. He's going to be coming back shortly. We're going to talk a little bit about the Clintons because there's a new book coming out about Bill Clinton.
And we're going to have that author on, too.
Well, not today.
Not today.
But coming
soon.
Up. All that next here on Air America Radio.
Hi, this is Reverend Barry Lynn from Americans United for Separation of Church and State. If you want to get the truth about the Bush administration's ongoing battle against science and reason, tune in to The War on Brains with Mort Milfington on Morning Sedition, Air America Radio.
800-801-GAME. That's 1-800-801-GAME. Call now, 1-800-801-GAME.
Past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Yes.
This morning's edition on Air America Radio. It's Wednesday morning. It feels like Tuesday, though, obviously, because we had a 3-day weekend.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you know that those guys, you know, the guys at Marino's Fish, did you know that people are actually coming in? This is a fish store by where I live, if you don't know, if you've never heard me talk about Marino's Fish.
Where is that, in Queens? Not,
it's in Astoria, Queens.
Yes.
But this isn't about them giving me fish, okay? I have an understanding with them. Some days they pay for the fish. Some days, you know, they're like, have a fish. Yeah, that's a nice thing. You know, have a monkfish, have a scallop or two.
Okay.
Okay? That's a nice thing.
Scallops,
you know,
are not cheap.
Obviously, I'm not getting paid for this. But here's the thing. You know what? That there are now people that come into Marino's. Apparently, a woman comes in just to see what the guys look like.
Uh-oh.
Because they heard me talking about it. They just said, I just wanted to see what you guys look like. So I have a point of reference in my head. So basically, this woman didn't want to make up fish guys in her head anymore.
Really?
She wanted to have a point of reference in reality.
Did she buy something at least?
I don't know. It doesn't matter. You know, they're okay over there.
I want to hear from them, actually.
You want to hear from the fish guys?
I want to hear what the fish guys actually sound like.
Wait, here.
We should do a remote for Marino's brother. What time do they open?
I'll do an impression. Here's my impression. Where's my autographed picture? Where's my autographed picture of you guys? I'm like, yeah, I don't know if we have one of the two of us. Where's the picture? What do you want, scallops? Hey, you know what? Let's move on. We don't have all day here. Every week we bring you the latest news from the front lines of the four-year global war being waged by the Bush administration. Here with today's dispatch from the War on Brains is war correspondent Mort Milfington.
Dateline, Portland, Oregon. This country's proud leader in progressive urban planning until it was used as a backdrop for a kindergarten cop. Portland, 150 years old, almost half the age of its current rain shower. Wait, I got another one. Portland, nicknamed Stumptown in 1847 for its thousands of tree stumps, then Puddletown for thousands of puddles, then P-Town for, well, you don't want to know what more. Where the hell is that? This week, a rogue contingent of diplococcal Dumbledores, known as the Oregon State Senate, rejected a bill that would have finally made it legal for reformed ex-prostitutes to become teachers. Now, don't get your skivvies in a wad, Mark, and Mark. According to the Commission on Teacher Credentials, former prostitutes applying for teaching licenses is not common in America. But turning to prostitution after teaching is. Yeah. Well, under Oregon's three tricks you're outlaw, commissioners have to turn down applications from daddy's bitches, regardless of any potential mitigating circumstances. You know, circumstances like growing up in Portland. Should this country really be choosy when it comes to hiring teachers? Who is better prepared to teach our children more than a body harlot? They're used to dealing with emotionally retarded males with sexual problems. They're adept at defending themselves from knife attacks. They're accustomed to starvation wages. And they're already very friendly with the school board and half the city council. It's a no-brainer. Here are the details, Mark, as I understand it. The bill was sponsored by Senator Margaret Carter and pushed hard through her Senate Education Committee. But fearing how the Republican Senate might react, Carter pulled it out at the last moment. Pretty hot, huh?
All right, Mort. I appreciate how creative you're trying to be with the sexual innuendos here, but they're really lame.
What's the matter, Mark? Can't wait for the big payoff? Think this premise is getting limp? Want me to take another position?
Yeah. What exactly is your position, Mort?
Make no mistake about it, Mark. I'm pro-ho. But I don't just want our kids taught by former prostitutes. I want them taught by working prostitutes. After all, who would you rather have teaching your children about spatial dynamics? Mrs. Welsh, who believes 17 angels can fit on the head of a pin? Or Queen Bee, who can fit 17 guys named Angel in the back of her Nova. And don't forget, according to our great whore president, performing more than one job at a time is uniquely American. And that's today's dispatch from the War on Brains.
Wow. Mort, you're going straight to hell.
I'm really blue lately.
You sure as are.
Man. I got to express myself.
Don't you like Portland, though?
I love, they have great biking there.
Biking is very nice. It's a pretty city. Powell's Books is up in Portland. That's a great bookstore.
Right, but they don't want to let prostitutes teach.
Yeah, I understand.
Teach what?
Yeah, you know, didn't you listen to the whole thing?
Where were you? Reading DC Comics?
Yeah.
All right, so Mort, thank you. What do you got on the hot plate for today? Anything?
Well, you know, I got to go home and take a nap.
Oh, wow, that's exciting.
Sleep of the just.
Uh-huh. Did you ever see that movie, Talk to Her? The Almodovar film?
Wow, you're way over my head, Mr. Artsy film guy.
I'm just wondering. I watched that.
Why don't you ask me about Jules A. Jim next?
Hey, you ever seen that film, Jules A. Jim, the Truffaut film?
Hell yeah, that was the most annoying film I've ever seen.
Annoying film?
Annoying.
You want to go now?
I can't even hear it. Give me Mickey Mouse headphones.
So you're mispronouncing words because your headphones talk to you?
That's right, Mark.
I see, said the blind man.
Hey, did you know we're going to be down at City Bakery on Friday? That's on 18th Street between 5th and 6th Avenues right here in New York City. We're going to be doing the show live if you want to come watch.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're not going to be
I might be in the audience, sure.
Yeah, we're not going to be having you on. But
that's okay. I don't want to go on. I don't want to be on this train wreck.
It wasn't a train wreck until you started talking post-bit.
Post-bit, what is that, tech talk?
You know, yes, tech talk. You know, I'm going to be at Bananas next month?
Really?
Bananas in New Jersey.
And
yeah.
You're going to be at Go Nuts in Cincinnati?
No.
And then I've got a hemorrhage in Lodi?
Hey. Watch that Lodi talk, pal. Lodi.
Bursting aneurysm. That's funny.
I'm having a stroke.
Yeah, that's it.
Anaheim?
That used to be a great club. You remember that back in the day when you were in a team and... Remember that?
We were a great team. We had a lot of critical acclaim. Nobody thought we were funny, though.
Now, just on a critical level, you know, on a technique level, were you the straight guy or the... What's the opposite of a straight guy?
I was the...
You're the goofy guy.
I was the goofy guy who kept on saying all sorts of inappropriate things.
Like what? Like,
are you channeling your therapy sessions here? Well, Mark, I think that means that maybe you have a poor self-esteem and some father issues.
Blah, 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 blah. Give us one of your old jokes. You got an old joke? Come on.
Yeah, I have one of my old jokes.
Yeah.
Well, my little something personal about myself. My father is a horrible racist.
Yeah.
When I say horrible, I mean he's just not very good at it.
Whoa! Yeah, that's good. I think you should stick with the character work. That seems to be working.
Sure, you want to bring stuff out of context.
Oh, wow. Okay, here we go. We got to go, man. Sorry, man. I think I won this one. Don't you feel that way?
Oh, is this a competition? Wow.
We're going to be back with Russ Feingold.
Yeah, Senator from Wisconsin.
Coming up next. Six past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hey.
You know, it is Wednesday morning, and I will say we had him on the show last week, and a lot of you called in to say thanks. This man is one of the last true remaining Democrats, one of the last remaining true Democrats is what I'm trying to say. He's back on the show again this morning, this time from his home state in Wisconsin. Good morning, Senator Russ Feingold. Thanks for coming on the show.
Hey, Senator.
Good morning. Thanks for letting me be a repeat performer here.
Oh, we're glad to have you. We know you're launching a new political action committee today, the Progressive Patriots Fund, but I want to ask you a couple of questions. First, they found out who Deep Throat is, this guy Mark Felt. What's your reaction to that?
It brings back memories of college, coming back from a summer job in 1973, and every day just being riveted by this whole Watergate thing and the thought that Richard Nixon could actually be forced to leave office. It was one of the most joyous things for those of us who grew up in the era.
So do you feel some closure now? I mean, did you ever put much thought into who it was?
I think I had closure on Watergate a while ago.
Oh, that's good. Do you think if something like that were to happen again in the climate, the political climate we live in today, Senator, that it would be found out, that it would have the same implications, that it would even be investigated?
I worry that it would be extremely hard to determine what's going on. I worry with all the games that are played with classifying this and not classifying that and people's willingness to hide the ball in this administration. I worry whether or not we would find out. And I hope there would still be courageous people like Felt and Archibald Cox and others who would come forward. But it is a time that it strikes me as much more difficult to get to the bottom of what's going on in these situations.
Okay, so why do you think primarily that is? Because this administration has gotten so good at spinning things and misinformation?
You know, what's bothering me is that it appears that people are willing to not tell the truth in politics, which has always been a problem, but that a lot of times the public doesn't punish them for it. I mean, the fact that this administration could make up so many stories and do so many things inappropriate leading up to the war in Iraq and that somehow they would be reelected is a sign to me that the value of truth and integrity for some reason isn't getting the kind of attention that it used to get. I hope the American people rise up and say, wait a minute, at an absolute minimum, our elected officials should be open and straight with us. That has to be a fundamental value of our politics.
Mm. Senator Russ Feingold, you were on the air with us last week, and we got a number of calls and emails, and a lot of them said that they thought you were one of the last true Democrats, one of the last true progressives, certainly in the upper house of Congress. Now, is the formation of this Progressive Patriots Fund a step in that direction? Is that what you're looking to do with it, perhaps to encourage other people to take progressive positions?
Yeah, we can't just have sort of a Democrat without it meaning anything. I think we need a progressive Democrat agenda. I'm from the progressive state, the state of Fighting Bob La Follette, the great progressive senator. And, you know, progressivism in Wisconsin doesn't just mean that you take a compassionate attitude toward people and worry about things like health care and jobs, but also that you actually make progress, that you're practical, that you make sure you combine fiscal discipline and bipartisanship with trying to solve people's problems, that you try to basically find the best ideas and pursue them. And what I want to do with this Progressive Patriots Fund, which is a leadership pack, and in particular with this new website that we're launching today, the ProgressivePatriotsFund.com, is to help sort of a grassroots or net roots effort across the country that all of us have to be engaged in to try to turn around what happened in the last election and the election before that and the election before that. We can't take this anymore. There's not very many of us left, and we absolutely have to show our power by using technology, the net, the web, and all the different opportunities that we have. And it's amazing. Look, we put this thing up at 2 o'clock yesterday. By 7:45, we had 400 people that had already come on it, and we're getting responses. And in particular, what we're trying to do is get people revved up about trying to fix or change the critical provisions of the USA Patriot Act that have to be changed. So I'm excited about this. We need a whole national effort led by many different people. I want to be one of the persons through this leadership pack to try to turn this mess around.
Now, are you going? Now, is this in any way, in conflict with the DNC? It seems to me that sometimes, it's hard to get Democrats to unify around stuff.
Well, this isn't in conflict with Democratic National Committee at all. I hope it's entirely complementary.
Good.
The two people that I know that have been talking about the fact that we have to have a 50-state strategy, not a red and blue strategy, are myself and Howard Dean.
Oh, good.
Howard Dean is going to some of these places. I've already been to Alabama and Central Florida. We Democrats have to work together, and I'm hoping there are many other people that launch efforts like this, and we can all come together. We can't wait till next year. We have to do it now.
Now, what about this group of Democrats that we talked about before that aligned themselves or got together with the Republicans to strike the deal on the filibuster? There seems to be a movement within the Democratic Party to the center. Is there such a thing as a center, or are these, is there – we'll just address that question.
Yeah, I think the center is a mirage. I think
yeah.
what the center often is that wasn't a compromise. That was a deal. That was cutting a deal. And frankly, I think the Republicans that were involved were pretty courageous because, they were trying to avoid this disaster of eliminating the filibuster. But, somebody basically put a gun to our head and said, give us $1,000. And because of this deal, we said, tell you what, I'll give you $800 and maybe later on, if you put the gun to my head again, you'll get the other $200. That's basically what happened. So I was one of the Democrats who believed that was an unfortunate, extremely unfortunate reward for the right wing in this country that's willing to do just about anything to get their way. So, look, it's good that the disaster was avoided. But for us to think that somehow that means that we're just going to cut all the issues in half, that's not how it works. If the best idea is a conservative idea, go with it. If the best idea is a liberal idea, go with it. The idea that somehow you have to split everything down the middle to make people a little bit happy, basically is a gift to the special interest.
But now, Senator,
it isn't how you get things right.
Yeah,
Senator, when you look at the landscape for next year's I guess you would call them off-year elections, there are some people who believe that the only way that the Democrats can make headway, particularly in the Senate, is by winning in some red states and maintaining Democratic senators in those red states. How will this new Progressive Patriots Fund make that happen?
Well, it's already helping it happen. The Progressive Patriots Fund allowed me to go to Alabama and make appearances with Democrats. There's a group called the Magic City Democrats in Birmingham, Alabama. These are a wonderful group, especially of young Democrats, who are very excited because they believe they can elect a Democrat governor in Alabama next year. Well, we went down, and a couple of hundred people showed up. I was thrilled. And they were so pumped up that somebody was willing to come down to Alabama and not take it for granted. So this fund makes it possible for me, and then other funds would make it possible for others to say, yes, Alabama, we're not going to just ignore you, but we're going to help restart this progressive movement in a state that really has a very populist tradition. We make a mistake when we think that places like Texas and Alabama don't have very deep populist traditions. They are there, and we need to reconnect with them. They feel ignored. So I got to tell you, it was extremely exciting, and I look forward to doing more of it.
Senator Feingold, another question about how about some addressing some issues around election reform, around the fear of these electronic voting machines, of redistricting. Are you guys going to be working on any of that type of stuff?
That has to be a major part of it. You know, as hard as I worked on campaign finance reform, even more important is that people believe, and that is in fact the case, that the votes are being counted correctly. You cannot have a functioning democracy if people believe there's something suspicious. And I go to every Wisconsin county every year and hold a town meeting, listening sessions.
Mm-hmm.
For the first time, I'm hearing an awful lot of people really expressing real anxiety after these last two elections, that somehow there's something really rotten in Denmark, that there really is a problem with votes being counted correctly. So not only in the Congress, but using things like this ProgressivePatriotsFund.com, we want to motivate people to demand real investigations and real legislation to guarantee the integrity of the voting system. And that's something we hear in both urban and rural areas.
Now, how come
a high agenda item?
Now, how come that hasn't been? I mean, I don't hear many senators talking about it at all. I mean, John Conyers in the Congress is the only guy. I just don't hear. Are there other senators that are thinking along these lines
you? Absolutely. Congressman Rush Holt in the House has got a bill. Hillary Clinton's got a bill.
And John Kerry, too, I guess, too, huh?
Yeah, sure. Many of us are involved. A lot of times people say we're not hearing from you. And, you know, the problem is, of course, is that we don't have a majority in the House. We don't have a majority in the Senate. We don't have the presidency. It's not easy to get people to hear us.
Who's going
to
be the next Democratic president? Help us out. You got any forecasts? Who are you looking at?
You thinking about running, maybe?
I don't know who's going to be the next Democratic president, but we better darn well get one in 2008.
Okay,
I'm going to work my heart out to make it happen.
You got any ideas, Senator?
I got a lot of ideas.
All right,
I think the time is now for us to spend a year and a half trying to turn things around in the next election, to organize the country, to have a lot of players out there saying, look, we want to help. And then, you know, in a year and a half, then people should start getting serious about whether they want to run or not. But now is the time to get everybody fired up, to let everybody know that everyone's included, that everyone can be a part of this progressive coalition. And that's how you get the grassroots and netroots organizations going that can elect a Democratic president. There'll be plenty of time to focus on individuals later.
Okay, tremendous.
All right, guys.
It's great talking to you.
Thanks a lot, Senator
Feingold. Thanks for joining us, Senator Feingold. You got me a little worked up. I'm excited.
Hey.
It's the Progressive Patriots Fund. I guess we'll have a link to the website on our morningsedition.com this afternoon or maybe this morning.
Yeah.
It's just interesting that he didn't want to give any names because it's hard to imagine. I mean, do you think Clinton could possibly be president? I just don't know.
It's possible. You know, there were people that were floating Russ Feingold's name as potentially presidential timber, but then you get into that. Well, he can't win. He's too liberal.
Yeah, I don't think that's true. Yeah, I wonder if he was suggesting that if he was going to be president.
I tried to ask him, but we'll get him back again.
All right. Well, we're going to come back and we're going to talk. We're going to talk a little bit of how some of Bush's policies are leading to more teenage anal sex.
Uh-oh.
How do you like that? Next, 17 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Morning Tradition on the air. MorningsEdition.com, Air America Radio.
Our state variation. Call American Life, 1-866-492-2500. That's 1-866-492-2500.
Twenty-one past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Yo.
It's Morning's Edition on Air America Radio. Hey, if you want to see us live, come to City Bakery this Friday. It's on 18th Street between 5th and 6th Avenue, right here in Manhattan. From 6 to 9 a.m., we'll be doing our show.
Yeah.
And I've said that you can touch Mark Riley, but apparently no. You can't.
Don't put your hands on me.
You can't touch me though. I will let you.
It's a legacy of slavery.
Yes. You know, maybe it's intimacy issues, Mark. Maybe it's a boundary
thing. It's a legacy of slavery.
All right. It's not a
boundary.
Brothers
don't like to be touched.
I get you. I hear you.
I touch Mark Riley every day.
Oh, you do?
Oh, my God.
What am I missing here? When does this happen?
Yeah, what am I missing here?
Yeah. Not hard enough, I guess.
Oh, Lord. Here we go.
But we will be there. Mike Doty's going to be there. New York Post gossip columnist Paula Froelich will be there.
Dishing.
Yeah. I've never read her column. Is that bad?
Well, you know, Christian Slater got busted here in New York the other day, so maybe we can get her to talk about that.
Yeah, but
just an ordinary groping, allegedly.
Nah, I'm not even saying anything. I'm just like, What is that? What the words are trying to form, they're not. It's like the primordial soup of vocabulary in my mouth. It's just like it's not coming out. Nothing is evolving. But come down to City Bakery on Friday. Yeah, you have coffee. We'll be giving away some Mike Doty CDs, I believe. Perhaps mugs. I've been told about mugs. That's it. They get a big new guy in here. To turn everything around in promotions, and he just comes up to me and goes, "We got mugs coming."
Got mugs, man.
And that means something.
That's swag, baby.
We got mugs coming. So I want to talk about a segment. Why do you got to speak in radio language, Mark? Why don't you just speak in English? I was watching that 60 Minutes.
Oh, yeah.
Like a week or so ago. They had the piece on teenage abstinence, and they had a profile of this guy, Dee Patton. He's a Christian youth minister. He founded a thing called the Silver Ring Thing. Now, this is basically a teenage kind of rock band-oriented revival show kind of thing.
Oh, not another one of those.
Dude, they get like $1 million in federal and state subsidies. I don't know if it's yearly, but I think it is yearly.
There's a salary, though.
Right. They fill up auditoriums, and they have a rock band, and the Silver Ring thing is that you put on this special chastity ring. It's an abstinence-only program. This guy gets up there and says, "Come on, you guys. Condoms don't work. Love Jesus." You know, and they
Whoa. Time out.
I'm making
that up. Condoms don't work. Love Jesus?
I'm making that up.
But, is that a letter?
No, but he does say, apparently, the whole pitch with this, when you are teaching abstinence-only education in a school, in a public school that is getting state money, you have to tell them that sex is not an option and that condoms don't work. Which is ridiculous, all right? So what happens?
They always work for me.
Well, of course they work if you use them properly. You know, of course.
They always work for me.
There you go. Twice.
Well, I don't know about the properly part. That's only me.
No, but you know what I'm saying. But the thing is that teenagers are being misled, and this whole idea of teenage chastity is a little bit of a sham. It doesn't really work. And some of the other stuff that they teach in abstinence only, the thing that really upsets me is that they asked this guy, Patton, they asked him about his own daughter. Like, he says, "My own daughter," this is a quote from him, "My own daughter, my 16-year-old daughter, tells me she's going to be sexually active. I would not tell her to use a condom," he says. This is this guy, Patton, this youth minister. His name is Denny Patton.
Pointed to the maternity ward.
The Silver Ring thing. Well, no, he says, "I don't think it'll protect her. It won't protect her heart. It won't protect her emotional life. And it's not going to protect her. I don't want her to get out there and think that she's going to be protected by using condoms." Apparently, he's not real clear of what they're supposed to do.
Wait a minute.
He's saying it's not going to protect her heart or her emotional life. It's not going to protect her. But these are misleading things. Basically, he's trying to spin it, saying that, you know, the repercussions emotionally and socially of premarital sex are so extreme that they're using those as scare tactics to keep these kids away from condoms and away from sex. Which is fine. You know, if you don't want to have sex as a teenager, if you think it's not a good idea, I understand that. But they're putting out misinformation. Much of that.
Well, not only that, scaring kids doesn't work.
Right.
If the history of the world has taught us anything, it should teach us that trying to scare kids with sex, which some religious denominations have been trying to do for centuries, does not work. The fact of the matter is, people are going to try, people are going to experiment. This is a powerful force that people are trying to fight here. Now, hey, you know, no one wants to see their kids have sex before they're ready, before their time. But that's something you teach in the home, and you teach people to, you know, to wait, especially if it's a girl, because I have an 8-year-old daughter, and she will be waiting. But the bottom line here is, you cannot say to people, to say that condoms do not work flies in the face of science.
Right.
In the face of science.
But they try to terrify the kids. And then, you know, if somebody does get pregnant, like there was that story a couple of weeks ago about the teenage student that got pregnant, was not allowed to go to her graduation at a Catholic school.
Yep.
you know, there's no help on the other side of it either. So they terrify these kids about sex, and then they don't necessarily help them if they do get pregnant, and then they're trying to restrict reproductive freedom as well. Where does this leave the kids? Well, apparently this abstinence only and this chastity stuff does not stop sexually transmitted diseases, because it actually encourages them to do things that
they shouldn't be doing either.
Well, Professor Peter Berman will join us in a minute to explain why abstinence-only programs favored by the right wing harm the kids as opposed to help them. Next on Air America Radio.
He rides and he rides.
Morning Tradition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Cure the ammunition dumps. It just goes on and on.
Jerry Springer on Air America Radio.
Thirty-four past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. I'm excited to talk to our next guest. I saw him on that 60 Minutes episode about abstinence only.
Yeah.
The Silver Ring thing, ministries of this guy, what's his name, Denny Patton, who was preaching. He does these big, almost rock show abstinence only gigs. And Professor Behrman was the voice of reason. He co-authored the most comprehensive study ever done on adolescent health and sexuality. Behrman's investigators interviewed more than 20,000 young people about virginity pledge programs. Welcome to the show, Peter Behrman.
Thanks.
Good morning. Right.
I'm really happy you're here, because it just seems to me that tell me exactly what your study did reveal about teens who pledge abstinence from sex.
Well, the study showed that when kids took these virginity pledges, that on average, when they were adolescents, they would delay sex about 18 months. So they would delay the transition to first sex about 18 months.
Until they graduated?
No. You know, of course, if they're taking a pledge to remain virgins their whole life, so or until marriage, which is 12 years ahead if they're 14. But on average, it shows they do have some delay, but that delay is completely shaped by the social context in which they lived. So if no kids in their community pledged, then there was no pledge effect, and if too many kids in their community pledged, there was no pledge effect. So that for some kids, this pledge, you know, worked to help them delay sex. That was the first part of the study, and the other finding was, of course, that when these kids did have sex, they were unlikely to use condoms or contraception, because it's a little dissonant to simultaneously imagine that you're not going to have sex and then find yourself carrying a condom.
So, okay, so number one, they may have prolonged, they may have put off sex for up to a year and a half. When they did have sex, they usually did it unsafely, because they wouldn't have a condom on them, nor would they be educated properly in how to use them or their efficiency, because they're told that they don't work.
Right. They're basically told that condoms fail all the time, that they're not protective, and so they have less incentive to use them. So that was one study. And the second study looked at these same kids as they had become young adults and looked at them when they were 18 to 24, and showed that the pledger kids, who are now young adults at 18 to 24, had the same rates of STDs as the non-pledger kids. And there were three obvious reasons for this. I mean, the first is that they were less likely to use condoms. So any benefit, again, that they got from pledging disappears by lack of protection.
Right.
The second thing is that pledgers were less likely to think that they had an STD when they had them. They were less likely to go see a doctor to get diagnosed for an STD, and they were less likely to be treated for it. So the STD infections that they had, they carried for a longer period of time. And the third reason is that the kids who, or the young adults who were virgins, compared to the young adults who were virgins who hadn't taken a pledge, were more likely to engage in anal and oral sex. And
opposed to lose their virginity, quote-unquote.
Right. So they're less likely to use condoms, and so they enhance their risk. So basically, these two studies show that the pledge works for some kids in some contexts, and sometimes doesn't work for all kids, and that it offers no real protection with respect to the things you care about from a public health point of view.
But it might be dangerous. It seems to me that, you know, in the broad view, that abstinence-only teaching is dangerous.
Yeah, I think that it's dangerous in the sense that for the kids who follow this teaching, it puts them at enhanced risk. It doesn't provide any benefits with respect to pregnancy or STDs, so it puts them at danger. And I think that is it may be dangerous for other people as well, since the kids who are likely to take these pledges are likely to as likely to get STDs, but are significantly less likely to go see doctors. They'll carry these infections longer, so there's more infection in the population.
Professor Peter Bierman, why does it seem as though there is always this life and death struggle between abstinence and condom use? I mean, it almost appears as though some of these abstinence-only programs, and I'm certainly no expert on them, but it seems as though they somehow try to equate condom use with promiscuity.
Yeah. I mean, I think the abstinence-only programs are construed to be programs about public health, but they're really not. They're really programs about, you know, cultural reform. So the real message is not about, you know, helping kids or helping young adults protect themselves from things they don't want to have happen, like get pregnant or get an STD. The real force behind the movements is a cultural movement to transform the nature of sexual behavior in our country. So, you know, they create a false dichotomy between abstinence and condoms. It just doesn't have to be there. There's a kind of constant message in the abstinence literature, which is that kids and young adults can't handle mixed messages. For example, the message that parents might say, it's better to not have sex, which is true, but if you're going to have sex, at least protect yourself. So the proponents of the abstinence-only movement think that that's a message that's too complicated for kids to handle.
So instead, just scare the hell out of them.
Yeah.
So the mature parent who knows that the possibility of an adolescent child having sex is high, you don't want them to get in trouble, you don't want them to do it unsafely, so say, look, you know, it's not a good idea, but here's a condom, here's how you use it, here are the instructions. If you get in trouble, I would hope you would come talk to me, as opposed to if you have sex, you'll be rejected socially, you'll become, completely mentally incapacitated, you'll probably get a disease or get pregnant, and condoms can't stop it. That's fear tactics. There's no way that's going to work.
Yeah. I mean, I think the most telling thing about the 60 Minutes show actually was this preacher who said that if his daughter was having sex, he would tell her not to use a condom.
Right.
It was really amazing.
And he sort of skirted around the issue in the sense that he told her not to use it because it would hurt her emotionally.
Yeah.
It wouldn't protect her heart, and it's not going to protect her. He never once said it wouldn't protect her against pregnancy.
Right, because you know, although they will pretend that there's a high condom failure rate, which there is, of course, if you put a condom on your hand, it's not going to work.
Right.
But if you use condoms properly, they work. So they imagine that there's a high failure rate, counting all the improper uses of condoms, and then say, oh, it doesn't work, so it's not useful. It's essentially irresponsible. I guess that's the simplest way of saying it.
Professor Bierman, it seems to me that one of the byproducts of these abstinence programs is a slight redefinition of what constitutes sex. If these young people are having oral and anal, are they actually considering that to be sex?
Yeah. I mean, it's a funny question. I guess, who try to preserve their technical virginity by having oral and anal sex are imagining that they're doing something that's not quite sex. But I think the real thing is that when kids take a pledge, they, you know, their parents are involved. It's likely that it's a public pledge. The people in their community are involved and so on. So the sign of violating the pledge is pregnancy. And that's, you know, STDs don't really announce themselves on
the body. They're just being creative.
Kids are creative. They want to avoid pregnancy. That's an old, you know, that's an old routine that you used to also see in the South in the 40s and 50s.
It's also been, I know that in the Catholic Church, it's not obviously in the scriptures, but I know that that was a way to avoid pregnancy there.
People
too.
People have been creative for a long time.
Sure, I imagine as long as from the day they figured out that it felt good, they've been creative. Now let me ask you a question. I've read some more progressive literature from the 60s and 70s, you know, Wilhelm Reich and people like this who really believed that sexual education would free the populace from neurosis and repression. Have you done any comparative studies in countries that promote condom use, that have a healthy sexual education program against some of the stuff you did here?
Well, we haven't done any real studies, but there's pretty strong evidence that, you know, if you look at the United States and then you look at Europe, where there's a healthy attitude towards sex and there's decent sex education and condoms are widely diffused through the population, you see, you know, completely different outcomes. So you see far fewer teenage unwanted pregnancies, and you see much, much lower STD rates. So,
and we can't forget that what you're referring to as cultural reform is essentially, you know, religious intent. That it seems to me that in the 60 Minutes piece that much of this abstinence-only program is coming from the religious right, and it's enforced by the administration, and public schools and institutions are being bullied by religious fanatics to bring these kids into the religious fold, to frightening them around sex.
Yeah, it's a part of a large-scale movement to transform our culture. It's part, you know, it's the same movement. It's, you know, it's related to the same movement that proposes that schools ought to teach creationism instead of evolution.
Absolutely.
It's an anti-scientific movement. I guess the disturbing thing is that when you think about public health, what you'd like is to have scientific results help us think about how to solve public health problems. And here, what happens is that the scientific results are ignored, and the ideological program is funded and continues to advance.
Great, great point to end the interview with. Thank you, Peter Behrman. It was a pleasure talking to you.
Thanks, Professor.
Bye.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, that. There you go.
It's crazy. It's crazy.
There you have it. We're going to you know what? We're going to do some more cliff notes when we come back. We're going to close things up for today in just a few minutes. We might even get a call from me.
Uh-oh.
It's 45 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Join the Morning Sedition. Right now, call 866-303-2270.
What?
That's 866-303-2270.
You don't know until you've tried this.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Damn good.
243-1483. That's 1-800-243-1483. Call Stop Sign right now. 1-800-243-1483.
All right, it's time to land. 49 past the hour. Mark Maron, that's Mark Riley.
Hey.
Oh, my God. What a day it's been.
Hey.
I don't even know what that means.
It's Wednesday.
Well, Chris,
I'm sorry to bother you, dude, but Future Mark is on line one.
Future Mark, that guy's great. Put him through.
Hey, buddy, what's up?
So what's going on 50 years from today?
Well, I just got back from an Al-Qaeda barbecue.
Well, what are you talking about, man? Are you pulling my chain?
No, it was fun. Al-Qaeda had a Memorial Day thing this weekend. Barbecue, baseball, we blew up some cars, stuff like that.
Oh, okay. I'm really lost now. Al-Qaeda's in America, and they do stuff for Memorial Day?
Okay, buddy. Look, here's the deal. You know that whole war on terror you've got going now?
Yeah.
We lost.
Oh, dude.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's not as bad as you think. The Islamic extremists, they came over here, they got turned on by all the powers and goodies, moved into the capital, and sort of just, you know, became like us. They wanted to be Americans. They just didn't know it until they got here.
So when did this happen?
Around 2020, after America went bankrupt and the Chinese confiscated our army and our weapons. So the Al-Qaeda thing was more of a, you know, it was like a corporate takeover. They kind of saved our asses, actually.
Unbelievable. We lost.
Uh-huh.
So what's has everything changed?
Well, you know, not...
Oh, my God. Is that what I think it is?
There is no God but Allah, Mark. Salam alaikum, my brother.
I just don't believe this. America turned Islamic?
Well, not really. We only have to hit the carpet a couple times a day. Nobody really prays, though. And the religious police only crack down during Ramadan.
So wasn't there any kind of resistance? Did anyone fight back?
Oh, yeah, yeah. There was some rock throwing in the beginning. But then the Islamists threw this huge kegger. You know, sort of a mixer. We all got to know each other better. Everybody got pretty messed up. There was a lot of hugging. That whole, you're my best friend thing afterwards. And we were all like, yeah, you can stay. You know, the kegger was really the masterstroke. Everyone just caved.
So I'm trying to wrap my head around this. Me actually joined Al-Qaeda.
Yeah, but it's kind of like the Rotary or the Kiwanis Club, you know, it's just a resume builder, networking type thing. You know, I may want to run for Shia Council one of these days.
What's going on?
Oh, I have to go make an appearance at the protest. We're you know, burning the Saudi flag today.
The Saudi flag? I mean, why would you burn the Saudi flag?
Well, after the Muslims won the war on terror, the entire Middle East turned Presbyterian. Those contrary bastards. Excuse me a second. death to the unclean Presbyterian infidels, death to Saudi Arabia.
Whoa, wow.
There, it should do it.
I'm just blown away by this whole thing. I mean, I got to go think about this.
Man.
Oh, yeah, is there anything that you want me to look out for, anything you have to warn me about before I take off here?
Oh, yeah, yeah. This is actually a couple years down the road, but they're going to outlaw smoking.
Huh.
And the tobacco industry is going to come out with this new thing. It's an oil that you massage into your temples.
What's it for?
Well, it's supposed to control your appetite, make you look cool, and give you something to do with your hands at parties. All right, they're going to say it's not addictive.
Uh-huh.
But it is.
Really?
Oh, merciful Allah, it is.
Oh.
So stay away from it.
Okay, all right. Well, thanks.
Uh-huh.
Salam alaikum, I guess.
Alaikum salam to you, Mark. See ya.
Oh, boy. I don't know about that future thing,
Wow.
It's going to get a little weirder than we anticipated, my friend. So, you know, Brian from Everett, I don't know if a lot of people who are listening now know about Brian from Everett. Brian from Everett is a fan of ours that we have. He was up all night long. He's in Washington. He's bunkered in somewhere. And we started getting this series of email messages of a song he was trying to write for Morning Sedition. He was trying to write us a song.
Yeah.
And it was voicemail messages, one after the other. And we finally got him on the phone today, and he was able to get through the whole song, and it would be a crime not to share it. So here's Brian from Everett again with his song.
I'm not your monkey, man.
Come on, dude.
Hey.
Come on, dude.
Hey.
Come on, Brian. We've been waiting for this.
Hey, listen, I'm going to do a professional recording and send you a tape. How's that sound?
No, just give us a few. Give us at least one whole verse, Brian. Come on. I know you're not my monkey, but we're all enjoying it here.
Yeah, man. We got this song rolling around.
That doesn't sound original.
I got an inconsistent mental disposition.
The cheer scene.
Now how's that gonna look in the deposition?
Uh-huh.
I got all messed up by a crooked family physician. And now to clear my name, I'm on a mission. So please cut me some slack. This is a little Manchurian blowback. Don't think that I'm insane. It's just creepy weirdos messing with my brain. Now I may have some strange religious views, 'cause I believe Al Franken is the king of the Jews. And Jesus may have come from outer space, but it ain't no reason to make a federal case. So don't give me no flack, it's just a little Manchurian blowback. I was a drunken slob, but now I'm just a fry cook looking for a job.
Wow.
Manchurian blowback.
Hey.
I asked him to explain that one. So, I kind of get it. You know, oh, boy.
Brian, we love you, Brian.
Yeah, we do. I hope he's going to be
all
okay.
Five of you.
Yeah. We got to play tomorrow. Maybe we'll play that whole series of messages again because the buildup was just too much. For those of you who are just tuning in, here are a few highlights of what we talked about on the program today. It's time for Morning Sedition's Cliff Notes for today, Wednesday. A former FBI official says he was Watergate's deep throat. The 91-year-old former FBI agent also revealed to Woodward that Ronald Reagan was the Antichrist, Paul McCartney is really dead, and oh yeah, we killed Kennedy. How did I forget that? The quote. The identity of Deep Throat has been revealed, and it's some guy. You've never heard of him. It's very exciting. It's very exciting. Speaking of Deep Throat, a new book claims to reveal the secrets of the Clinton White House. Hillary taunted her husband's aides as being wimps by not fighting hard enough on Whitewater. Quote, JFK had a real... wait a minute. JFK had real men in his White House, adding, and real women in his bed. Monica Lewinsky, are you kidding me? Where's Marilyn or even Judith Exner? This is really insulting. Headline, Clinton lied about his weight. Tiny side story. Bush lied about our entire reason for going to war. Right. New monitoring system lets parents spy on their kids' lunches. The new lunch system is already being protested by bullies against monitoring, who are complaining that the system makes it impossible for them to beat up weaker kids and take their lunch money. Sheeple. Yes, that's right. There's we go. Here we go,
there's
sheeple.
We go.
There's we is. You know, You know, Mark Felt is also who Carly Simon's talking about, and you're so vain. There are no secrets, man. Wake up, sheeple. They want to eliminate mystery and imagination. Cover your ears. Hide your brains, man.
Oof.
Yeah, those are your Morning Sedition cliff notes for today. I'm coming unglued.
Hey, you're all right. You'll be all right. It's been a good show today. Tomorrow, we're going to have a mogul in here.
Yeah?
Yeah, straight up mogul. Russell Simmons joins us in studio. Plus, Johnny K Street will be
of
coming
course.
By. And another installment of the Morning Sedition Radio Theater.
Yay.
And if that's not enough, we'll make you listen anyway. Have a good one, Maren.
You too, Riley.
Air America Radio.